been read. Again, I want to welcome everyone to WCNA 26, Show Me How to Live. Today, our workshop topic is obsession and compulsion. And we have two speakers for you. And first up is Jimmy Kay from Puerto Rico.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Jimmy Kay, and I'm an addict. By the grace of God, I'm alive and clean.
All right.
I'm really overwhelmed by this convention. I got clean in New York, and I'm recovering in Puerto Rico now. And I don't get the opportunity a lot to be at a meeting this large where everyone speaks English. And the recovery I can fully participate in and understand. And I know that I'm especially blessed and fortunate. A lot of my friends are not here. There ain't too many people from my neighborhood clean. A lot of my friends in recovery have died. And I feel that emptiness. No, I feel them not here. Although in spirit, a lot of them are with me. A lot of people here with me today, you know, who love me and are supporting me by showing up. It is a gift to carry this message. And I'm reminded, no matter how long I've been around, as much as I've been doing this, it's so special. And I forget sometimes, you know. When I was asked to speak, you know, I was telling friends, yeah, I'm going to speak on obsession and compulsion. They go, man, can you relate to that? My first thought was, man, I've been obsessed and compulsed my whole life. You know, way before I used and in recovery and up to this moment. I come over early this morning because my wife was speaking. You know, I'm short, so I don't know if I look like I'm sitting down or this microphone's too high or trying to see over. But, you know, the rooms were big and there wasn't a lot of people here because I know they must have been out last night. And I said, man, I don't know what's going to be worse. If the room is full, am I going to be more nervous? Or if it's so big and with a few people, am I going to be nervous? But one thing was, I thought I was going to be sitting at a table. And I would only be nervous from the waist up. Well, now I'm nervous from top to bottom. This thing weighs 10 pounds all of a sudden. I didn't think I was going to pour the water into the cup when I was trying to get some water before. But I feel good, you know. When I was hearing the readings, I thought for a moment, wow, man, you know, carrying this message and getting this message and being a part of Narcotics Anonymous, not up in front of a large meeting. I mean, on a daily basis. You know, I just felt this calmness for a few seconds, you know, and I felt my higher power, you know, and I feel the spirit and the unity in this convention and in this room. And this is my third world convention. And yesterday, coming into the airport and seeing and just meeting with people and wherever I've been since I've arrived here, you know, our relationship, this guy told me at breakfast this morning, our relationship in Narcotics Anonymous starts with a hug. Anywhere else, you got to develop it, and maybe in the end, you're still hugging. I'm going to try to stay on the topic, so if I don't and you buy the tape, just change it to whatever it is, because I don't know what that's going to be. You know, we had our convention a few weeks ago, and a very special friend of mine was speaking, and I saw them reading the book, the basic text, and then reading the One Day at a Time meditation book. I said, damn, they must be studying or, you know, researching what they're going to talk on. This week I started thinking I should start doing that, you know. And all week, I've been real busy running around. I live a very full life. And I said, man, I'm going to write down what obsession is, what compulsion is. And I'm going to read the basic text and adjust for today. And I'm going to list all this stuff that's good to say. And, man, I had no time to do it. But I was packing late Wednesday night because I come up yesterday from Puerto Rico. And I did look at a dictionary, you know, what it means. Because I'm not the smartest guy in Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm not the smartest guy in the world. But I picked up a dictionary, and I don't know, it was one of business dictionaries, and compulsion and obsession wasn't even in there. So I guess it don't apply to them people. But I got this big book, you know, it's a big dictionary. And I looked it up, because I wanted to know something. You know, we all want to sound good and We want to know what we're talking about, or at least sound like we think we know what we're talking about. I looked up compulsion, and it said, an irresistible urge to commit an irrational act. I was like, wow. But I didn't know what irrational meant, really. So I had to go look that up. I'm serious. I looked up irrational, and it says, lacking mental clarity. And I was like, wow, I'm glad I looked this up. And I felt it was important to state that and then correlate it with our literature. So then I went and looked up obsession. And it said a preoccupation of the mind of a thought or act of an undesirable degree. I don't believe I remembered all this. It says something like that. And I was like, wow, man. And then this morning I read the first step. And my wife spoke on the first step, and she stole some of my lines, because I saw her reading the book this morning, and I was reading it. But she used this in the first step meeting, but this is mine. So she got it from me, if you were in that first meeting. Or if you buy this tape and it comes out that way. In our book, it says, the compulsion is that once we start, can't stop. You know, we're totally powerless. And one is too many and a thousand never enough. And it's once we get going, and I know we all lived that a million times over. And the obsession is the overpowering desire to keep using or want to use, even when we know it's destroying our lives. Well, you know, all of that stuff sounds good, and it's out of the book. Let me try to tell you how it is for me, or when it was, when I was using, or even now. Because what I saw in the Just for Today and the basic text, when I looked through this, it kept referring, it stood out for me, that addiction affects every area of our lives. So, you know, the drugs, of course, it's a major part of it, especially in the beginning. And man, to keep on wanting to use when you know it was destroying your life. And I thought of when I was on an emergency table, DOA, you know, almost lost all my, you know, bodily functions. I was almost like a paraplegic. And the thought I had was, damn, I only did half the shot. I hope they didn't find the work, because when I go home, I'm going to do the rest. And I couldn't even move physically, but my mind still wanted to use. And I heard myself say that. And man, it wasn't until I came here, got clean, and realized what obsession was. Because I didn't think and feel or understand this in my life before coming to NA. You know, I was like, man, it blows my mind. I think back on it now, and I'm going to be clean in 10 years, or 10 years in a few weeks. I was like a late bloomer when I got here. I didn't understand about feelings and stuff like that. I remember being in meetings for 4 months. 4 months. And people were talking about being paranoid. And for 4 months, I was like, nah, I never was paranoid. No way. And then it dawned on me, after hearing someone share about being paranoid, you know, cops coming in the window and all of that stuff. All them times, I was overseas one time in the service. I used to have to sneak in the jungle to smoke a joint. And I'd be paralyzed with fear because the monkeys and the MPs were coming to get me. And I couldn't move, just smoking a joint. And I said, that's what paranoia is, you know. So staring out the window all night waiting for someone to bring me some drugs, and no one even went. I'm serious. And it sure is funny now, but let me tell you, when I think about it, I could feel it a lot of different ways than funny. And, you know, I think of that, and I'm saying, man, that compulsion, there's no doubt in my mind. You know, and I had tried meetings in 85, and I didn't get the message, I didn't want it. You know, I had a problem with God, and people talking about staying clean because I didn't want it. Boy, man, I had to go back out another year and a half and almost die. And I thank God, and for you people, I had the chance to come back and get clean. And now I knew. When people were bringing the H&I message in, now I knew what they were talking about. All of a sudden, I was willing to listen, and I understood clearly. And when they talked about using, when you didn't want to use, you know, that compulsion, that once you start, nothing's going to, you know, till you die. Or unless you're forced in an environment where you can't get out and use. And also in the first step, you know, I was talking to a good friend of mine that was up in Miami a few weeks ago, and I said, man, I'm speaking on obsession and compulsion. He goes, man, that's step one. And I guess that's why my wife mentioned in the step one meeting. Because that physical part, the physical aspect of our disease, when we start, something just triggers off for us. And it's so different than for other people. Can't put it down. And nothing's going to stop. When the money runs out or, you know, anything in your way is going to be knocked over, runned over, and you're going to use. And then the mental part. And it takes a while after getting clean for that to lift. And I was thinking of that in my recovery. I don't know when the obsession or the desire to use lifted. You know, I guess sometime in the 90 days, it started going to a lot of meetings and woke up one day and it dawned on me I didn't think of using. And it was a change. You know, it was a change. And it only came from sharing with other addicts in this fellowship and having a sponsor and going through the steps and doing service. Maybe that was my first obsession when I got into Narcotics Anonymous with service. I don't know if anyone can really relate to that. But, you know, you want to be everywhere and do everything and be on every committee and sergeant of H&I. And I was that. And, you know, you find out a little bit down the road that you're really neglecting some other personal needs, some things. And for a lot of us, it takes years for that to happen. You know, I just got out of service again for a year from, you know, active committee or regional stuff like that, conventions. And it's almost a year. I'm just doing, like, group service. And that's healthy because you can focus on some other things, your career, your family. But we get obsessed. You know, we want what we want when we want it. And we want to look good and the image and all of that. And for me, a lot of the compulsion and the obsession and recovery was as much about pain as when I used. You know, whether it was not dealing with a relationship, not being honest, you know, all of those things that a lot of us have to go through. And I thank God I have people in my life that I was able to lean on. And they gave me the guidance, they gave me the support and the comfort I needed to keep coming and stay clean and make it through some of that stuff. You know, lately for me, you know, I belong to this organization and I'm running an election. And man, am I preoccupied with just that thought and how it affects me emotionally. Sometimes I'm real confident, my chances look real good, and other times I'm as fearful, fear of failing. And last week I felt a lot of times like when I was a newcomer, coming around, not knowing, being confused, not knowing what was going to happen in my life, trying to understand what happened in my past. And I was like, wow, man, what feelings. And what it boils down to is having that balance in your life. Because whatever I do in my life, I got to have some type of balance with it. Whether it's work, relationship, or, you know, sex, money, all those other side things. I don't know if any of you can understand about those things. But, you know, I tell you, I came into rooms in a relationship. This thought always comes to my mind, this story. And I came into rooms in a relationship. And at 2.5 years clean, that relationship ended. And then I went through probably one of the most painful emotional times, a whole different type of emotional pain than I had experienced using or getting beat up and lumped up and all of that. And it took a while for that process to emotionally let go and all that. So after a period of time, I was dating. I was single the first time in recovery. I didn't know many women. I had a book of 142 phone numbers. I only had 5 women in there. They all were from service, H&I. And I never knew I had a problem with women or relationships or being obsessed, you know, totally taking the focus off of the priorities that should be in my life. And I met this girl. And man, my mind went off. Went out on a few dates. I was like, wow, this is something else. And I used to come home from work, race through the door, jump over the bed, turn on the answering machine to see if this woman had called me. And it was like, I didn't think really nothing too much at that point, to tell you the truth. But when I shared this with my sponsor, he says, man, you're totally obsessed. I said, no, I'm not. What are you kidding? I said, what's wrong with that? Not, you are obsessed. You are totally off your priority, out of balance, out of whack. You're nuts. You're insane. And I had to learn. I had to learn and practice how to come home, take off my coat, go to the bathroom, do what I had to do, wash my hands, then run, dive over the bed, turn on the answer, see if this woman called me. I'm serious. I could only get a little bit better. And that's how it is for us. And when you start forgetting about your recovery and meetings and sponsees and commitments and job and these important things, your health, to focus on someone else, I know I'm in trouble. You know, I had to learn how to develop or try to practice working in a healthy relationship. And I'm glad I'm in a relationship with a woman in recovery. For me, it has been really something else. I don't talk about my wife a whole lot. She always sometimes says, how come you don't ever mention me when you're up there sharing? You know? She says that. I have to mention her. She's great. She's clean a long time. She's older than me. She's more mature. She's been through a lot of these things. She understands. And I'll tell you, if God didn't put someone like that in my life for a reason, I would be at a loss. You know, I've been blessed in many different ways. But, you know, through all of this, I think of obsession and compulsion and these other areas of our lives that it affects. Wow, man. You know, something happens on my job, and I'm not thinking of me. I'm thinking of everybody else, their business, you know, judging people and being critical of people. And it's because I'm totally preoccupied with them, and I don't have the focus on me. You know, and that compulsion, that once you start something, you can't stop. You know, once in a while, I work one day a week in this office. Other than that, I have another job. And I can never, like, manage my time. You know, I had a problem, like, getting out of the office in 8 hours. You know, I'm a workaholic, overachiever. Everything's got to be perfect, you know, and got to cram 24 hours into 8. And, you know, I have to, this thing's take, you know, what does it take to change it? It takes practice to change it. You know, I have to work hard sometimes on simple things, you know, to change that thought process. Because for me, learning about how to make these decisions and the process to do things right, like in the situation with starting the date again and with that woman, it had to be with help of someone explaining to me, pointing it out to me, because it didn't come from inside of me, you know, and it wasn't coming from my higher power. It came from another recovering addict who God put in my life. And from there, I was able to sort out these things and make a decision, because I never made decisions before, especially when I was using. It was about, let's go, get it done. And then I found out, being clean after a while, the same attitudes were very familiar. The same patterns of behavior, the same self-destructive things that we do to ourselves without drugs. You know, I had to think, man, how am I ever going to change this? And it took people that would give me time on the phone and after meetings and at meetings and on the side and in the back of meetings or hearing someone share about it. I had to learn how to change my life. And, you know, just recently I had a sponsee go through some obsessive compulsive things. He goes, how do you change this? And I tell you, I didn't have the answer for the guy. I said, you're going to have to go through this and learn for yourself, because I don't know how it's going to be for you. I can only tell you how it is for me. But I believe, and I think it's important to say today, and I hope it helps someone, you have to learn how to change that perception in your mind and change the behavior and attitudes of what's causing you pain. And the only solution for that, that I know of, is the 12 steps in Narcotics Anonymous. It's the only way. It's the only way that worked for me successfully to this point in my life, and I don't need to keep searching for something else. Although I've been open-minded to try a lot of different things since I've been here, but it's really a result of being here. And, you know, I'm the person today because I have tried to work on some of these things and change these attitudes and behaviors that are hurting me and hurting other people in my life. And these obsessive compulsive behaviors that would drive anyone else insane. I'm already insane, so I really ain't got to worry about that. But, you know, it's comforting to know that we're still sick. And that we still do some stupid things. And whether you've been here a long time or not, if you got a good support group and a home group, you're going to be all right. You know, I hit a wall in recovery with 8 years clean. A wall. You know, and I'm glad I've been through a lot of these different stages in recovery. But at 8 years clean, did I say 8 months? Wow, okay, I caught that one. 8 years clean. Felt totally empty, no spirituality, that I was living a lie, nothing to offer sponsees of this program. I had to start from scratch. And let me tell you, I've seen a lot of people that have been around longer than me go through something like this. And I had to dig deep and rely on a higher power more than ever. And I had that pain inside. And it's like the whole pain of my life all at once. And it's a very difficult period. And a lot of people in this room helped me with that. And I stayed clean. And a lot of it is from character defects, obsessive compulsive behaviors and actions. Living dirty, in recovery. And you know, I survived that. I'm not going to tell you all what it is. I think a lot of you know. If you don't live right, you're going to pay. You want to put that? You know, I had a good friend of mine in New York always used to say, there's no right way to do the wrong thing. And man, you're only going to learn that. Hopefully you'll learn it by listening to someone who's been through it. But a lot of us just don't listen very well sometimes, even when we see it happening around us. It's an amazing thing, this disease, that you can be clean and far away from using, but just as self-destructive and insane and crazy and in as much pain and misery as when you was out there. Blows my mind. Blows my mind. And it scares me. Yeah, I don't know if I'm going through some middle-age recovery process. I had stopped going to meetings. You know, not stopped going to meetings. I would not get up here and feel comfortable sharing at a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous, especially if I wasn't going to meetings. I had cut back from going to a lot of meetings. A lot of reasons for that. I had all the great reasons, all the good excuses. But, you know, my recovery has changed. It went through stages. And in the last year I did, I was cutting down to one meeting a week. Once in a while, one meeting every week and a half. And people would tell me, oh, man, you know, you're not around. And I got real busy and successful in my job. But I always went to a lot of meetings. I went to, like, meetings every day for almost 2 years. I did H&I service almost 5 years straight. I did a lot of other type of committee and regional service and stuff like that. Did service really for, like, 9 years. Went to a lot of meetings. Never stopped going to meetings. Never went to meetings irregularly. Because I've always believed and I've always said, those who go to meetings regularly will stay clean. And I know that, and I believe that, and I try to practice that. And I wouldn't sponsor people if I didn't go to meetings. But the fact is I had minimized my meeting attendance. And what happened is that when I got to Puerto Rico, I used to go to a lot of the Spanish groups, and I was involved with service and a convention. And since I got out of service in September, I started only going to my home group. We only got one English group on the island. We used to have meetings 4 nights a week, and we're lacking in support. We're down to one meeting a week, and it's hurting us. And I wasn't making the effort to go out and go to the Spanish groups, even though I'm not fluent in Spanish, but I speak some. But I was like, well, I don't need to go. I don't want to go. But, you know, I was going to meetings, but I'm saying it must be a stage I'm going through. And I would share with people who clean longer than me. And I would call a lot of my friends stateside. Because there's not a lot of people clean longer than me in my region. You know, there's not a wide choice of people. And to recover in the Caribbean is beautiful, let me tell you. Beautiful place to recover. And the people there are great. And Narcotics Anonymous there is alive and well. But I was calling people in the States, and they were saying, yo, man, you better pick up your tent, even if you got to go somewhere else. I can't go nowhere else. I'm not ready to leave Narcotics Anonymous. So I have to go back and dig harder and go to those Spanish groups, even though I may not understand the whole meeting, you know, and share with people on the side and have someone sit next to me and translate. I got to make the effort like when I was a newcomer. You know, that energy or that ambition to recover, I can't slacken that. And, you know, this is like one of the highlights of my year, to come to the World Convention. You know, this gives me a great dose of recovery, but it ain't going to last me every day. It's what's happening today. And when I go back, and for a long time, my first sponsor used to tell me, you know, how I feel is not determined on the amount of meetings I go to a week. And this is for people who've been around a while and have a solid foundation. You know, it's what you, how you live in your life, and if you're working the steps, and if you're carrying this message, and you're working with a sponsor, that's what it's about. And I'll tell you one thing, and this I honestly feel, and I can say, maybe my meeting attendance wasn't as up or as high as it had been steadily over the years, but boy, them steps and that higher power became more important in my life. And that's why you need a total program. And for me, I'm glad this program has so many different things to offer. Because I tell you, I went through changes down there, and, you know, I rely on people still for, you know, long-distance relationship and stuff like that. But I do sponsor two people on the island. I do sponsor a guy in New York. I am active in my recovery, and I am trying to do the best I can to go to meetings. And I picked up meetings in the last couple of weeks, let me tell you, especially since I knew I was speaking here today. But I'm being honest, because, you know, I don't want to get up and say, man, I've been doing service and going to meetings, and I'm down, and I got it going on, and I'm right. No way. But I feel good. I feel great. And I'll tell you something. This program has offered me so many things, not just staying clean. The people in my life, the places I've been, the things I've accomplished, and I got a lot of success happening for me on my job right now. And I'll tell you, my greatest success is staying clean. All this other stuff. One time I saved three people in a fire. You know, I was clean a couple of years, and they sent me to Washington, D.C. to give me this great national award. And I was on TV, I was in all these newspapers, and I was like, man, if I wasn't clean, I would never have been there that day to save them people. I would have ran in that house and ran out with the TV instead of the two-year-old baby. But, you know, I'm blessed. And, you know, at that time, I just want to share real brief. A friend of mine was dying of AIDS. I was in a lot of pain. And all these people were giving me all this attention. And I was like, wow, man, this wasn't important to me. I went to some thing in D.C. and senators and congressmen were shaking my hand. And I was like, if they knew who I was, if they knew what I was about, would they really come be doing this for me, you know? But I've been lucky. I really have. And I think, as far as obsession and compulsion goes, you have to replace that with the principles of this program. You know, you got to replace that fear with faith. You got to have that hope that a higher power is going to get you through what you're going through. You have to have that willingness to do what it takes to stay clean. You got to keep coming to meetings, that's for sure. If you're not working with a sponsor, you're missing something. I really liked the second speaker last night. He's very mild mannerisms. And for me, you know, this is a treat for me. You know, I got clean in the States, and it brings me back to all the meetings I went to. In the basements of churches and community centers and wherever these meetings were. And I'm reminded of how far I've come. And then when I come and hear someone share, I'm reminded how obsessed and compulsed I still am. And how much I still have to work on it, just like anybody else. And, you know, whatever it is, driving down the street, see a beautiful girl, you got to go around the block 10 times, even though I'm supposed to be home or at a meeting somewhere. And it's those character defects, and it's those things that we do that the book says drain us of our... I don't do that anymore. I'm using that as an example. Well, I'm married. I'm not supposed to do them things. But I'm honest, so I better say something. And I'm struggling because I'm obsessed. And I'm compulsed. It can be a struggle, but I don't have to struggle no more. And it's a lot less harder if I get honest with somebody, at least. And I really want to thank you. I want to thank Narcotics Anonymous. You know, like I say, it's a gift. And to see so many people here, for me, you know, I'm going to take this back with me to the island. I'm going to remember this. It's not about getting your name on the board out there and getting everyone, you know, being the one to share, you know. I used to always say, well, you know, if I'm at a meeting, it's no big deal if I'm speaking. I'm just the first one who gets to share. If I'm at a big meeting, it's no big deal because, you know, I'm just going to share and it's like a regular meeting. Well, it didn't really feel that way when I got up here, but it feels that way now. I'm just another addict. I'm another member of this fellowship. I got an opportunity to share and carry this message, and I can only do it with you and a higher power. And I tell you, I'm looking forward to the rest of this convention. This isn't like the highlight for me. It's not. Meeting people and seeing so many people together. And I'm not down for all this crazy stuff and the way some of us act and dress and on. Try not to judge people. But the collective experience and the unity that's at a convention and the different type of topics and workshops that we got and the people with the clean time that a lot of us can hold on to. that no matter what you're going through, you can stay here and stay clean. Those are the reasons I'm here. And for me, it's really especially because I come from a place where, well, we're pretty large, but we're spread out. We got about 100 meetings a week, but I hurt a little bit. My recovery's changed. I don't have the variety that I've had before, but I got a lot of other ways to do it. You know, thank God for the phone. Thank God for my wife. Thank God for a lot of people that I see on a regular basis. And I love you all. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you, Jimmy, for cheering. Our next speaker is Jimmy from Chicago.
My name's Jim, and I'm an addict, a grateful recovering addict. See, everybody always knew I was an addict, but now I'm recovering, and maybe some people don't know it. I'm proud to be a recovering addict, as I was proud to be a using addict. I want to thank Jimmy for getting up and telling my story. So you don't need to, you know, hear anything more. You can just replay the tape, and you got my story basically the same way. I want to thank the convention committee for providing an opportunity for so many people to get together. I guess a lot of work, and I haven't worked on a convention in a long time, trying to stay away from. I'll show up and I'll do something behind the scenes. I won't work on putting one together because it's. I'm obsessive and compulsive, and I want to run the whole thing. So, since I won't do it my way, well, I have to do it my way, which is I get behind the scenes. Last night, somebody asked me, would I do something that was totally mindless, dull, and boring? I said, that's perfect for me. Thank you. You know? Is it behind the scenes? They said, oh, yeah, nobody's even going to see you do it. I said, fine, wonderful. That's the way I am. But this is good. This convention... the World Convention really means a lot to me. The very first convention I ever went to was a World Convention. In fact, I had not even gone to a convention yet, and I volunteered to work on the World Convention we had in Chicago in 84, and I ended up being the vice chairperson of registration. So as we're getting ready to open up the doors, I'm like in Panic City, you know. There's like 500 people lying down the stairs. I'm going, how are we going to handle this? How are we going to handle this, you know? And somebody says, it's going to be fine. We got it all set up. And it was. Even this was before computerized stuff. Just went bam, 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 and you know, we got all 500 people processed in a real short period of time. Because God was working and addicts were working together. You know, this is truly, truly a we program. And I'm just so grateful to be here. All the world conventions I've ever been to, or any convention, has always been good. After that one, I went to the one in D.C., and I said, I'm going to every world convention, but my higher power has had other plans for me. I've had other things I've had to do. So I'm glad this one was relatively close, just 297 miles or whatever it is. And, you know, I drove down, and I try not to do illegal acts these days, but I was in a hurry to get here. So I found somebody with a radar detector and got in their back bumper. I'd like to thank all the volunteers, everybody who's helped out in this convention, because you've made a wonderful opportunity. Yeah, give them a hand. Not the people with the names, but the people who just, you know, do the faceless service. That's what real service is. I want to qualify that this is purely my opinion, my thoughts. Like Jimmy, I have to use a dictionary. When I got into recovery, the first book I got after we published the basic text was I got a basic text. But we had to wait till we published it first. I got a dictionary before I got a basic text because I needed to figure out what the words meant. And I consider that a real important thing because even though I've gone to some college, I don't consider myself to be extremely well-read. I think I understand things, and I'll tell you I understand exactly what you're saying when you haven't even started to say it yet. And so I have to learn to sit back and really listen and pay attention to see if what's going on is really what I think it is. Obsession and compulsion are different for me than preoccupation or simply thinking about something. It's different than daydreaming. It's different than fantasizing. You know, to me, obsession is when something takes up my time and my energy. It really sits there and prevents me from thinking about other thoughts. I can't function as a human being when I'm obsessed. Obsession is an illness to me. I don't think I have that psychiatric disorder, but I don't go to psychiatrists and ask anyway, you know. I think, judging from my drug addiction, I know that I'm definitely qualified for all those sort of things. I could look in any one of the diagnostic manuals and I could say, yes, I'm this, yes, I'm this, yes, I'm that. It doesn't matter. I got that way as a result of taking chemicals. I don't think I was that way beforehand. I was obsessive and compulsive, don't get me wrong, but not quite that way. It also creates a lot of discomfort in life, and it does for me. It interferes with my ability to function as a normal, caring human being. I don't want that today. Today I want something different in my life. I also found that obsession and compulsive are unreasonable, meaning that when I think about it, when I talk about it to other people, they look at me as if I'm nuts. You know, I start talking about something I'm really obsessed about, they start saying, why would you want to take on another service position? You're already chairperson of your home group, you're treasurer of the Tuesday night group, you're on one committee and you're thinking about taking, you know, what's with you? You know, get a life. You know. And excessive. Yeah, definitely I'm into excessiveness. I think the obsessions are the thoughts, the images, and the impulses we have, and the compulsion is the acting out on it. It's come into my life in such a way that obsession means that I feel like I've been invaded by my own thoughts. What I want to do can't get done. What I think about doing does not get done. What I plan to do does not get done. Like on Fridays. I don't work Fridays. My wife does. I think, gee, I can get a lot done today. I pick up the newspaper and there goes 2 hours. You know. I get a phone call from somebody, I start going off on something else, and 3 hours later, it's like, what was I going to do today? I forgot already. If I don't write it down, that's why I brought up this paper. If I don't write it down, I'm just going to ramble. I'll get up here and tell his story again. You don't need to hear that. Or maybe you do. It might be better than mine. I also know that when I'm obsessed and full of compulsion, I feel like my life and everything around it is out of control. And I don't like that feeling. I suffered that enough when I was in my addiction, you know, my drug addiction. I'm still in my addiction in terms of these other things, but I don't like the idea that I don't have some influence, that I don't have a choice. I'm not really in control. My higher power is, the program of Narcotics Anonymous is in control of my life today. When I first came around, I asked you people, what did I need to do? And you told me, just go to enough meetings and listen. Nobody even told me to work the steps at first. They told me I was going to do that. They said, don't worry about it. Come to enough meetings until you understand it, you know. And that really worked for me. The obsessions I've had have been, oh, God. There's just too many of them. But basically, they consist of self-doubt. They consist of impulses and urges I have. They consist of this feeling that I've got to get my life in order. I've been feeling that ever since I was born, and I haven't gotten in order yet. I don't know if anybody else can relate to this at all. You know, and I'm going to do it tomorrow. I just don't have time today. The other obsessive thing that I've always had in my life has been sexual images. That's always been a part of my life. You know, I've always been preoccupied sexually, even when I was a little kid. These are not normal thoughts. Everybody thinks about sex. I'm a true addict because when I think about sex, I think about that. I think about everything else going along with it. I become so obsessed with it, I forget to get a partner, you know. Yeah. It's much easier up in my head. There's nobody else to talk to. I don't think anybody else can relate. Okay. And these are not just normal thoughts. These are not just normal worries and concerns. These are obsessions, you know. These are major. And I always try and handle them with some kind of action. And that's where compulsion comes in. These two are tied in just, you know, they're a big circle. I do one. I do the compulsion. I start to become obsessed again when I start thinking about it later. Compulsions are repeated behaviors or actions that may take place in real action, or it may take place just in my thoughts, thinking about doing things sometimes. And for me, what I do is I try and, these things I keep telling myself, these things will make me feel better. They don't. They never do. I always feel worse. This is what's the difference between doing something for pleasure or for fun an obsession and a compulsion is, when I'm done doing whatever it is, I still don't feel any better. You know, if I tell myself I'm going to paint the garage and I paint the garage and when it's done I feel good, but when I tell myself I'm going to clean the house, no matter how good a job I've done, even if I spent 18 hours doing it, it's still not clean enough. You get the difference? One's a compulsion, the other's real, real things. That's what the difference is. I've always had a hard time. I can't tell what reality is, and that's why I need you people to help me out, you know? Because reality is not what takes place between my ears, and what takes place between the human beings that live in this world. And you people taught me that. One of the other things I've done is I've tried to check things over and over again. Be compulsive about, you know, like, I got to do this, I got to do this. So I'll make up a list, and then I'll review the list, and I'll go over the list again. You know, unlike him, well, I started thinking about this as soon as somebody told me about it. I knew I was going to sit down and write out a detailed, lengthy thing. You know, I was going to find out all this stuff. Well, I used the dictionary this morning, and... you know, that's where I got a lot of my thoughts. Plus, I've been thinking and talking with my sponsor about it. When somebody called me up and told me about it, said, oh, by the way, tell your sponsor this is not about his obsessions and compulsions. It's about yours. And I said, gee, he hasn't shared with me much about that, you know, because most of the time he spent dealing with my obsessions and compulsions. So I'm not sure what his are. I guess he takes them to his sponsor. And it's nice. You know, I've got a sponsor who's got a sponsor who I believe has a sponsor, and they're all in NA. You know, it took me a long time to look for that chain. You know. When I first came around to Narcotics Anonymous, and I wanted a Narcotics Anonymous sponsor, I looked at all the men, and their lives were going to hell in a handbasket. You know, one of them was sleeping with newcomers all the time. The other one was losing his house because gambling. You know, a couple other people had some other things. I said, gee, I don't know. So I found a woman who was in a committed relationship, and I asked her if she'd sponsor me. And she said, no, Jim, go get a man to sponsor you. I said, I listed the people who I'd asked and thought about, and she said, I guess you're right, you know, but keep looking, you know.